Okay, they're going to be watching Daddy anyway on the moon, aren't they?
Yes, fortunately, the EVAs occur early enough in the evening so that they can at least stay up and watch the first part of it, so I'm thankful for that.
Uh-huh. How did you get into flying then after your education?
Well, at the Naval Academy, after about my third year, I decided that I wanted to fly, but to be a naval aviator, you had to go to sea, and I just did not like sea duty. Now, that sounds strange from a guy that went to the Naval Academy, but I hated sea duty, and I decided that if I was going to be a pilot, then it better be in the Air Force. So I volunteered for the Air Force, which at that time you could do.
Jim Irwin did this too, didn't he?
Yes, sir, he did.
Who was
Tom Stafford.
A lunar module pilot on Apollo 15.
Right. Tom Stafford was another. Don Eisley. We had quite a few. Bill Anders. There were quite a few of us that went to the Naval Academy, ended up in the Air Force.
And you flew hot jets?
Yes, I was
way?
In Germany for 3 years at the Ramstein, and loved my tour over there and got to see a lot of Europe and enjoyed it very much. Came back to MIT, and then after that went to Edwards to the test pilot school.
Is that where you became interested in and also eligible to enter the astronaut program?
Right, right. We had a after graduation from test pilot school, I stayed on as an instructor, and I thought I'd missed being an astronaut by a couple of years. I figured that I was just had been a little bit too young and immature and inexperienced to get selected, and all lo and behold, about a month after I graduated from test pilot school, NASA announced a call for another group, and I was very lucky.
At least you had that 1,500 hours you needed, and you had the application in.
That's right, and was after a pretty arduous selection process, Deke called one day and said that...
Deke Slayton.
That's correct. The president, still my boss, called and said that we had been selected, and I immediately jumped up on the roof of the house and shouted it to the world that I was in the program, and I've never been as happy in my life.
And we're going to hear an ebullient and lively Charlie Duke all over the lunar surface.
I hope so. I hope we can keep our composure. Not get too serious. I'm really not a very serious guy, though we have trained very hard for the program, and I think we're very well qualified. I hope that I can keep my sense of humor on the lunar surface.
We expect to hear that, Charlie.
I hope so.
And good luck to you. We'll be listening.
Thanks, Rick.
Charlie Duke, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 16. And we'll be listening. There he is live up around the moon. He says we've got RCS reg light. That's Charlie Duke. That, of course, was recorded here. The Manned Spacecraft Center several weeks ago before they took off on this big jaunt.
Okay, John, Reese Weaver, the DET is set.
We heard a great stream of checkouts of checklist items between John and Charlie.
Verify the FBAI 011.
They're primarily talking to each other right now, John Young and Charlie Duke, as they're going through their checklist before PDI, Powered Descent Initiation, 8 minutes from now.
20, please.
We gather then that since we didn't hear the report and since they're continuing this preparation for the powered descent, that Ken Mattingly did indeed, in fact, I think we can safely deduce that, even though we haven't had a report from Mission Control, that he did safely circularize his orbit. That was scheduled about an hour ago. About 50 minutes ago, while the two spacecraft were behind the moon. Otherwise, we wouldn't hear this final checkout at this moment, because the two spacecraft were in touch with each other, certainly, as they were behind the moon.
This is Apollo Control. While the crew of Orion is going through their pre-descent checklist, a word on the command service module, Casper. The circularization burn was on time. Current orbit is 53.1 by 67.8 nautical miles. Back to Orion.
Okay, while Orion finishes its final checklist of items, while John Young and Charlie Duke finish those things before the final descent, I'd like to recap briefly for you what happened to delay this descent and touchdown. Ken Mattingly in the command module attempted to set up his main propulsion rocket engine for a circularizing burn, in other words, to move up into a circular orbit above the moon. And a backup mode of steering on that rocket engine proved to have some fluctuation in it, some oscillation, as they call it. And so he postponed the burn until Mission Control and all of the hundreds of people supporting them here could analyze the problem. Manufacturers in California, other astronauts and engineers in the simulator here near Mission Control, and then men in the back room. And a final analysis was that the fluctuation in the backup steering system was not serious enough to jeopardize going ahead, burning the main rocket engine in the service propulsion system in the command module, using the primary guidance and navigation system, which is working all right. So the go-ahead after several extra revolutions of the moon has been given. Ken Mattingly is in his waiting or parking orbit, 100 kilometers above the surface, and John Young and Charles Duke will descend 5 minutes from now. We'll begin their descent. I'll be back momentarily from here in Houston. This is Rhett Turner.
This is the Voice of America's live coverage of the flight of Apollo 16. Just ready now to prepare for power descent in a few moments and touchdown. A delayed touchdown of almost 5 hours because of difficulties in a gimbal actuator in the command module, a problem that has been worked out by scientists and engineers at the field and at the Manned Spacecraft Center. Of course, the men are well aware of the area that they will come in over when they land, and of course they have the lunar rover with them this time. And the ascent stage of the lunar lander, in which they will descend to the moon in, has its small crew compartment, has a complete life support system. In other words, it has the earthly environment required for the survival of the astronauts. It also has a complete guidance and navigation system, with its computers and radar, several radio systems for communications, and an assortment of other machines and instruments. Now, the 5-ton thrust main engine of the descent stage has been designed to break the vehicle out of its lunar orbit, away from Apollo 16, and acting as a brake, land it softly on the moon. Now, this is the only rocket engine in existence whose thrust can be regulated. That's just like an automobile driver can regulate the speed of his vehicle. On departure from the lunar surface, the descent stage will remain behind, serving as a launch platform for the ascent stage, which contains the crew compartment. Now let's go back to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston and our live coverage report of the touchdown by VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
Okay, and we're now standing by for final descent. That's 3 minutes away, 3 minutes, 22 seconds on the countdown clock. Let's tune in and listen to what conversation there is preparatory to that.
Okay. Yep. Stand by for 2 minutes, John.
That's Charlie Duke talking to John Young. We're just tuning in with the two astronauts themselves as they talk to each other primarily. Mission Control is eavesdropping, as are we and the rest of the world. As the Apollo 16 astronauts prepare for the descent to the moon. 2 minutes, 50 seconds away from the beginning of this rocket burn by the descent propulsion system engine. The astronauts have a lengthy checklist. They have everything in little pads before them. Some of these can be put on the cuff of the suits. They're in the space suits inside the lunar module. I'm sure they don't pressurize them. The lunar module cabin, of course, is pressurized. They can move around easily.
Good.
That was Young.
Turn at about 10 miles, it looks like. Excellent. Okay, 2 minutes. Master arm on. Good. Master arm's on. Two lights, Houston.
2 minutes until power descent.
367 is in. Next thing is at 30 seconds, John. Turn the page.
Everything is, he says, turning the page of his checklist now. Command and service module, we understand, is in an orbit of 98 by 126 kilometers. We've gotten a word finally here. You heard, possibly you heard that come out in nautical miles just a minute ago.
Hey, Jim, you want us to turn the ranging back on?
Negative.
That's,
okay. We're in voice backup.
Roger.
That word down to Jim Irwin here below. They will begin the powered descent moving some 1,850 or so meters per second, and then they gradually have to descend down to zero in 12 minutes' time.
Okay, at 30, we hit engine
decelerate.
Arm, and we 30 seconds, engine arm goes to descent, and we always blank.
30 seconds.
5. Okay, engine arm descent. Armor's descent, altitude light, velocity light.
Here we go.
If no LH plus X. Okay.
About another 10 seconds.
Start push button if we get ullage.
Ullage, meaning the rocket fuel in the
ullage,
right
auto ullage.
Ullage.
Throw.
Here we go. Zero.
Okay. It's a start. It's a start. Command override is on.
The engine started.
Man.
They're on the way down.
Roger, we copy.
Beginning 1,850 so meters per second.
Decent engine command override. Master arm off. Master arm is coming off.
Okay.
Stand by for throttle up. Thrust to weight is okay.
Throttle starts low, builds up to maximum thrust about
25,
now.
26.
There it is.
On time. Feel that beauty? Come on.
Maximum thrust now.
Okay, thrust to weight is good.
Charlie says, feel that beauty? Come on.
66,000 feet. They were right on.
66,000 feet. You apparently is seeing... his radar must be picking up a signal already. That's higher than it normally would operate. They were going to be 16,000 feet higher than expected.
Hey, Jim, pitch over. Do you want me to go aft on me or stay forward?
Stay forward, and you've got to go at 1.
Got to go at 1 minute. Continue on. Everything
Roger.
Looks good.
Hey, we're way high, John. We got to get down. Way high on the H-dot. It's Charlie. Down to 45 already.
As John's saying, we're down to 45,000 feet, I'm sure he meant, already. It's about 15 kilometers above the surface now.
Good.
15,000 meters.
That's in 130.
Okay, Ryan, I have a 169
Double
for you.
Double H dot, almost. Yep.
Passing a minute and
go
30
ahead,
seconds into the burn.
Plus 00800.
That's an update to help guide them
plus
even
zero
more accurately.
Zero zero.
The Earth tracking is telling them of an...
And you have a go runner.
Excuse me, John. Okay, centered.
Earth tracking is giving them a bit of information on how to update the accuracy of the landing.
Some 180 miles to go to the landing site.
Y'all out here at 3. Off the... Might take that out when we get it. Oh, right. Eggs and things are tracking right on, Jim. Within a tenth of a foot a second.
Everything is tracking right on, he says. Another milestone at 3 minutes, 30 seconds from now. This total descent takes 12 minutes. Reducing speed constantly, full thrust on the descent rocket.
Propellants. 245
now.
Pressures are holding good in the... Yep.
Spacecraft will swing over to a vertical position any moment now at 3 minutes. That's the next milestone.
Roger, go at 3.
Roger, go at 3, says Jim Irwin. Yaw to vertical.
135 miles downrange.
135 miles from the touchdown spot.
And there's still 37 volts, Jim.
Roger, we copy.
Velocity lights out, Charlie. Okay.
It's about 100 kilometers away.
Probably. We got a...
They'll get a velocity update from the radar unit to update the computer from onboard readings at 5 minutes 30 seconds. .345 now into this burn, into this descent.
Minutes.
The final approach phase is called high gate. You may hear that called out.
Ryan, you go at 4.
With 50,000.
Continue to go at 4 minutes
in. Look at that. Altitude and velocity lights are out at 50K. Isn't that amazing?
50,000 feet.
We copy.
Look at that data, Houston.
Altitude and velocity lights are out at 50,000 feet.
90 miles to go.
You want to accept it.
Okay, you have a go to accept.
145.
Velocity 3,200 feet per second.
That's some 1,000 meters per second. They're about 140 kilometers from the touchdown spot. Haven't begun to descend too much. They're still moving primarily in a horizontal direction.
Descending at 112 feet per second.
There we go. 112 feet per second into the descent now as we go past the four-minute mark, approaching 5 minutes.
Things will be getting off a little bit now, too, now. Update. At 5 minutes.
Okay.
Coming in like gangbusters.
Ryan, you go at 5.
5 minutes into this 12-minute descent.
Roger.
In another 30 seconds, they should get another update from their landing radar unit in order to add another correction in their descent profile. Charlie Duke remarked what a...
39,000.
How good the rocket felt as it...
Hey, look at that. 136 feet difference now.
13,000 meters above the surface.
Hags is tracking about 1,000 high.
Ground's tracking them about 1,000 feet higher than expected.
6 minutes, we should be at 32,000.
300 meters. About 1,000 meters
out.
Ryan, you go
with
6.
Yeah, 1,000 meters.
45%. I don't know.
Descending now some...
39 miles to go.
About, as you heard there, 39 miles to
passing
go.
Passing through 33,000 feet.
It's about 1,100
it's
meters
up. 30,000. Mark it, 32,000.
About 50
30.
Kilometers.
Okay, looking good, John. What angle's getting down there?
About 60 kilometers from the landing site in horizontal direction. There's some...
Autobahn 7,
out of right 3.
Some 11,000 meters up.
Understand 7.3.
Roger.
Rocket's continuing to burn properly. 7 minutes now.
And 7 minutes, seven.
Mark it. 7 minutes, lights go, 104 down, 28,000, still about 1,000 high, it looks like.
Still about 300 meters higher than they should be at this
good.
Point.
Yeah, 223, setting up ready, the ag's ready at 14K.
At 9 minutes.
Then I go a 360 and then turn the camera on.
At 9 minutes, 20 seconds, you'll hear high gate.
Throttle down.
That's the final, beginning of the final approach phase. John Young just said, throttle down, throttle down.
16 miles to go.
Jim?
Loud and clear.
16 miles, about
okay.
24 kilometers to go.
Okay.
From the landing site.
21,000. Coming up on 8 minutes.
21,000 feet.
I can see the landing site from here, Charlie. Amazing.
7,000 meters, and John Young sees the landing site. He's got a visual.
130, we're right on, John. Right back on profile.
7,000 meters up, 24 kilometers from the site. John Young sees the landing site.
How does it look to you?
24 kilometers away.
You're ready there. Okay, stand about to update.
Much closer now.
Had a little roll steering here.
Continuing to slow down.
Roger, descent 1.
8 minutes, 40 seconds now.
Hey, Jim, we got about a 3-degree roll. Command in.
Roger.
Going to roll the spacecraft about 3 degrees.
Enter. 360 minus 0172. 0, enter. 367 is coming up. And I'm starting the clock, camera.
Go at 9.
Okay, we're out of 12,000, John.
About 4,000 meters up.
A little steep.
About 4,000 meters high. He's got a camera started to photograph this descent and touchdown.
Okay,
we're going to
be right on it, just about right on, maybe 10 feet. 10,000 feet.
3,000 meters.
Stand by.
Roughly.
64 and 8,200. Pro.
Pitch over.
Pitch over. Hey, there it is, Gators, Lone Star. Call
me the thing,
Charlie.
Okay,
38 degrees.
Pitch over in high gate.
North right.
They see all the landmarks.
Looks Gator. Like we're going to be able to make it, John. There's not too many blocks up there.
Ryan, you go
okay,
for landing.
Okay, 4,000 feet.
Go for landing.
42 LPD. 3,900 feet.
Okay, 2 to the south, Charlie.
Okay.
200
it's
feet.
In. Okay, 42, 41 LPD, 3,000 feet on profile.
Okay, there's, we're coming right down, going to be a little past,
okay, 41 LPD.
Okay.
That's, the LPD is the,
on profile.
Okay.
Landing point designator. It's a grid on the, commander's
LPD.
Window.
A couple of more in.
It tells him where he's going to touch down at his present rate of descent.
1,400 feet, 44.
We're into that final descent
looking
now.
Looking good. Out of 1,000 feet, right on profile. 54 LPD, dropping out the bottom now. 800 feet, 30 down.
Hey, Houston, we're going to be just a little long.
Roger.
But we're just now beam double spot.
He's a beam double spot crater.
23, 22 down at 500 feet.
This is one of the prominent landmarks he's looking for.
Okay, 300 feet, 15 down.
As he pitches over now, the antenna is just a little out of line with Earth, so the noise picks up.
Okay, fuel is good, 10%. That comes a shadow. Okay, 200 feet.
Just about to touch
down. Give me a couple of clicks up.
There comes the shadow of the limb. They can see it out in the distance.
Okay, 5 down at 130 feet. 2 forward.
About 40 meters up.
Home off, drifting. Okay, looking good.
Looking good,
perfect
says Charlie
over
Duke.
Here, John. A couple of big boulders.
Charlie's
not
looking
bad.
For boulders. They
okay,
don't think
80 feet.
They
that
were worried
great.
About the
looking
boulders
super.
In the
there's
way.
Dust. Okay, down at 3, 50 feet. Down at 4. Give me one click up.
Less than 20 meters
back
up.
Slightly. Okay, 2 down. Stand by for contact.
About to touch down.
I'm going to let her down. You level off. Let her on down. Okay, 76%.
Hovering. Hovering now.
Contact.
Contact.
Stop.
12 minutes and 12 seconds.
Throw. Engine arm.
And now the quick...
Oh, man. Throw. Engine arm. He finished command override. Okay, 413.
John Young says, oh, man. John says, well, we won't have to walk far to pick up rocks. We're in the middle of a bunch of them.
Fantastic.
That's a word that's been used before in this business.
Okay, you got it. Okay, we're forward to the north, forward and to the north of double spot, I would guess, about 200 meters to the north and maybe 150 meters to the west.
That's their estimate of where they are in relation to the touchdown spot plane.
Roger, I copy 200 meters north of double spot and about 150 meters west.
Dan, I could see all the way to the ground, just like flying the LTV. Piece of cake.
That's John Young.
That's good. Asset pressures look good. Okay, asset helium monitor cycle, I did. 02. Asset. Fantastic. it had won on the plane to Descartes. Well, remember, Scott, I better go easy on this land of radar circuit breaker, huh? Yeah, don't. Okay, that's the right one. The camera's off. Hey, it sure ain't flat, John. Wow, there's that ridge to the north.
That's Charlie Duke.
Yep, sure is. All we got to do is jump out the hatch, and we got plenty of rocks.
Houston, boy, it sure looks like you can make, I see Crown Crater from here. I can see Ray Crater from here. Not a boy. Almost had apoplexy, that program alarm, and that's your radar breaker. Charlie's about that. Charlie's got nothing but a ridge to look at.
That's John.
That sounds beautiful, John. Wish I were there.
Both of them extremely excited.
There's a ridge out in front of us, too, John. Yeah, there's a ridge in front of us.
That's John.
One to the side of us. And my guess is that we're in a subdued old crater that's got a lot more craters.
Roger, we copy. What
a neat place.
That's John Young. Charlie Duke,
hey,
just
Jim,
as excited.
Ridge in front of us,
that's
does
Charlie.
Does look like a subdued crater, and it maybe is a raised rim about 50 meters in front of us. About 4 or 5 meters tall. That about 30 or 40% of the surface is covered with boulders that are maybe a half a meter in size. On out in front of us and to the right, where we landed, there were.
Hey, man, Charlie, we got to stay, Houston.
Stand by.
John Young says, "Wait a minute, Charlie. Are we going to stay, Houston? Do we have a go to stay?" You forgot all about that. In his excitement at looking out the window. But they did, we heard.
Everything's
them.
Looking okay up to this point, John. We'll give you a final word here shortly.
Confirmation from the ground that so far everything looks okay on the monitoring of the systems. They went through the proper checklist the minute
they touched
down.
Yeah, we were coming down pretty good until they hit the stop button and then it fell out. The engine stopped.
I know exactly what you mean.
It's really nice to have your shout out there.
That's John
that's
Young.
Help. It's a good altitude gouge.
That's John Young.
That was super.
And Charlie Duke, they're on the surface of the moon right to the right as scheduled after the final descent began. The touchdown of Apollo 16 was successful. The two astronauts going through their post-flight checklist now after a few minutes of exciting a description of the landing site around them. They're about 200 meters forward to the north, 200 meters to the north of their landing crater and 150 meters west, according to their onboard estimate.
I've got one that must be 3 meters across.
That's John Young describing a big block.
Ryan, you're stay for T1.
Stay for T1. That means okay to stay on the moon for the moment.
Okay, stay for T1, T68, John, and I'll get the AGs going.
Program 68 in the computer. Get the AGS, the abort guidance system
in,
going.
400 to 4. Hey, Jim, that's off in a case of beer to Fido. I'll tell you, that targeting was just beautiful. Boy, you guys just started us right in there.
That's Charlie Duke saying,
that
hats off in a case of beer to Fido, the flight dynamics officer. They targeted them right in there with this modified target due to the delay in landing.
Where it says we are, I believe it. Hey, Jim, our 943s are minus 896.
We have them, Charlie.
1552. The engine stop reset. The engine stop reset. Okay, Pro. Call P12.
John said he could see the landing all the way in as though he were in the LTV. That's the Earth-borne simulator hovering device.
104. Plus 42. Plus 1664.
A very excited John Young when he first touched down with a, oh, man, his first exclamation when he realized
those
he was on the surface
good.
Of the moon.
Those numbers are good. Yep.
Okay, now they're doing the engineering functions, following through on checkout of all the systems on board the spacecraft. Normally, John Young's voice is a little deeper, a little lower than that of Charlie Duke.
Control, now 33, you got.
They're both so excited
take a minute,
that
we're counting down.
They both Ryan seem to be rather high tenors.
Flight 1-6-G, Charlie. My restraint harness has got me anchored. Oh, that's what the trouble is. Get AGS set, 410. Standing by. Now, that was a soup.
The AGS is set. That means that the abort guidance system is now set for a takeoff at what's called the T1 mark. That's the next landmark in this continuing count, should it be necessary to take off.
About level, we're not going to have a bit of trouble getting it.
Now, right
now, it's going to be near off.
As the astronauts touched down, Kim Mattingly was
not
going overhead.
It's not smooth. It's not that FF smooth, you know.
Say again, John.
Say it's not that FS smooth. We're in the middle of a block field.
Roger.
It has a crown crater up there. They're little blocks. You may have squished a few.
Says it's not very smooth, not
and,
that smooth.
Jim,
here.
We got crown crater out John's left window about 9 o'clock.
Roger.
And just looking at it from here, I don't think the rover's going to have any trouble going up that hill.
Glad to hear that.
Could be wrong. Slopes tend to fool you.
That was John saying, I don't think the rover's
going
to have any trouble
right too.
Going up that hill.
Big blocks on the rim, but not, the track did look good.
Look good, huh?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I think he meant what's called Stone Mountain. John Young looking out the right window, probably the left window of the spacecraft. If he's talking about the hill he could see from his window, that would be Stone Mountain, a large hill to the south, several kilometers away, which he's to navigate the rover up. And there was some concern about how many stones, how many big boulders there would be, and whether you can drive a car.
Turn on the water for a second, Charlie.
That's a good idea.
John Young and Charlie Duke on the surface of the moon. The descent was perfect, and two very excited spacemen, right where they've trained to go. They recognized all of the landmarks from the beginning of from the time they could first pitch over and see it, and that was at some.
That shadow's not as long as I thought it was going to be.
That was some 24 kilometers away and some 7,000 meters high. They spotted the site.
We dropped very far.
And John could pilot it right down into the proper landing spot. He says he was about 200 meters north and 150 meters west, his estimate, of the original predicted spot.
Man, we got a lot of rocks, that's for sure.
That's John Young. Man, we got a lot of rocks, that's for sure.
How's it looking, Jim?
How's it looking?
Still looking good. We're just standing by here.
I wish I could tell you what kind of rocks those are, Houston, but some of them are very white. And doggone if I can see. I'm not close enough to them, but... I see one white one with some black. Can't tell whether that's dirt or not on it.
That's
but
Young.
It could be a white breccia.
That's John Young. He's already trying to describe one of the rocks he
every
sees.
Every one of them are angular, too, Justin. Yeah, they're all angular. They're out of South Ray, I believe.
He thinks it's a white breccia.
Without any dust on it at all. At about 50 minutes. Out of those three little craters. Right.
No dust on it at all, says Charlie Duke. That's an area they will cover. They will be going out right toward that rock, just to the west of their landing site.
Houston, when I told you that I thought this terrain might be very spectacular, boy, I was just kidding. It really is something looking at that mountain. That is a big mountain, Charlie. Yeah, we're within 2 minutes, John.
That was John Duke commenting on the size of the mountain.
I agree with you. It is really
Stone Mountain to the south.
That's big, bright.
That's the informal name for this mountain to the south given by the astronauts. It's something with which John is very familiar. It's a place called Stone Mountain near Atlanta, Georgia, where he went to school at Georgia Tech. And they've informally called this mountain on the moon Stone Mountain. They've given these landmarks familiar
Ryan,
names.
Stay for T2.
Informally for purposes of their traverses.
Bye.
A stay for T2.
Stay for T2.
let's go to Poo and then ICS PTT.
Go for the next landmark in the stay period. That means now that Ken Mattingly in the command module is now passing on overhead beyond abort range, meaning
okay,
if they had to take off
the,
in this first 10 minutes,
I have some changes.
They would have had to, there would have been time to get back to Ken Mattingly on this first revolution.
A few more in order to conserve power to give you maximum stay time.
So now Jim Irwin on Earth wants to pass up some more information to him. Now there's time to think of the next landmark and the next thing to be done, T2.
It's a lot nicer when you take the restraint harness off.
He's talking about his spacesuit's a lot nicer when you take the restraint harness off inside the lunar module. They're standing there in their suits, and there are some restraint harnesses which reach out into the sides and the backs. They're standing when they land. They're not strapped into any couches. The lunar module has no couches. They're standing in front of their pilot's control panel looking out the window, and they depend upon these harnesses and just to hold them in place as they descend and touch down. It's a very smooth thing, however, the way this descent propulsion system engine burns, and the you don't get the feeling of being rocked around as you may in an airplane.
Houston, are we go for dips, Ben?
Go for dips vent, meaning venting of the descent propulsion system engine. That's taking the pressure off of the fuel tanks in the bottom of the lunar module. Of course, one of the things which has been discussed as being
Houston, Master Arms on, two lights.
A deterrent to... or at least something that's derogatory to taking samples near the limb is the fact that some scientists have said that they've been worried about to what extent the exhausts from the rocket and such things as this venting.
Official touchdown time, 104:29.36, ground elapsed time.
And there you have the official touchdown time. The scientists and those examining the samples have been a little worried about whether the samples collected here would be contaminated by exhausts and venting residues.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay, on 1-2, in the right column there. About halfway down, the S-band pitching yaw set, you can scratch that, and the business about peak. In other words, we're going to stay with the Omni. Over.
That means that they're not going to bother trying to up the high-gain
okay,
antenna.
Okay, the next change is on 1-3, down at the bottom of the page in the battery reconfiguration. Instead of battery 2 off, we want battery 3 off reset. Next line down. Battery L should be CDR instead of LMP. And then, of course, the talkback should be CDR after that. Next line down should be battery 4.
Now, what Jim Irwin is giving Charlie Duke and John Young now is some updates for their flight plan, giving them some modifications and instructions on things they're supposed to carry out, supposed to do. First order, first change referred to a use of the high-gain antenna. They're not going to try to align it with the Earth. They're going to go with the Omni antennas, the more broadband but less sensitive antennas, to aim back at Earth. He's talking about the third one down from the left. He's going on a checklist of items and updates and changes from Mission Control. A very excited John Young and Charlie Duke successfully landing the lunar module Orion on the surface of the moon. Several revolutions late, but successful nevertheless. I'm sure they had some reservations there for a time as to whether they would make it or not, due to the problem which the command module had, Ken Mattingly, in the command module earlier. Let's see. There was some 2 hours late, a little over 2 hours late landing. Jim Irwin, who's done that himself, is the capsule communicator. He was the lunar module pilot on Apollo 15, the last mission.
We got inverter 2 powering the AC right now.
Okay, part of our power-saving program is to not have the AC powered up on the surface.
Okay, that's fine.
And the next change...
Somebody's got...
And the last change is on page 1-7, on the right column there, about four lines down. We want inverter...
I think I said some 2 hours later. That showed you how time flies for those of us watching and waiting for this descent. That was some 6 hours later, or some three lunar revolutions later, for the successful descent and touchdown. They were scheduled to descend at about 2:15 Houston time in the afternoon, and it's been at around 8:15 in the evening Houston time instead. Three revolutions extra around the moon before descent.
Okay, Jim, we're going to press on with the first rev checklist.
Yes, go ahead, and be advised that your stars should be good as published.
Well, that sounds pretty good.
Charlie Duke says, okay, can we go ahead now with the LIM checklist? Jim Irwin says, please do. As I mentioned, Jim Irwin was the last man to go through this same series of checks on the last Apollo flight, Apollo 15, last summer. He and Dave Scott touched down in Hadley Rill for their spectacular examination of that beautiful area of the moon. Both Scott and Irwin describing it as fantastically beautiful. That's a word which just seems to be without parallel, or there's something that just can't be surpassed in the lexicon of the astronauts. It's just fantastic, and they mean it when they say it, with great emotion and great enthusiasm, great feeling. And it'll be hard to top the excitement and the feeling of elation displayed by both John Young and Charlie Duke when they touched down, especially since there was, for some time there, for several hours, considerable doubt as to whether they would be allowed to go on down or not. Although the lunar module was working fine, the command module wasn't. And they had to make sure that they could get it to... that the command module was in good shape, that the service propulsion system rocket was safe to conduct the rest of its maneuvers. Ken Mattingly waiting there in lunar orbit. Now, the first extravehicular activity will not occur for some hours now. In fact, it has been postponed until 16 hours 30 GMT. Tomorrow or Friday.
More changes to that surface checklist whenever it's convenient for someone to copy.
The astronauts going about their checklist on board. Both Duke and Young asked before this descent that they be allowed to sleep, get some rest before the first extravehicular excursion. Mission Control concurred, so the...
Control, and Orion is safely on the ground at Descartes. Having landed at 104.29.36, ground elapsed time. In local time, that's 8.23 p.m., time of landing. Not too far away from the planned landing point. After the crew has a chance to power down the lunar module, do some housekeeping, They will have a sleep period which will begin at about 107 hours, about 2 hours and 10 minutes from now, with EVA1 starting tomorrow morning at about 10:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. This is Apollo Control at 104.51.
Told us to sleep first.
So, as you heard there, there's about 3 hours of work to do, at least 2.5 hours of work to do before settling down for a good sleep period. Oh, listen to John and Jim talking about
that. You deserve a good sleep.
Jim Irwin telling John he deserves a good sleep. Let's see what he says in return. Then after an 8-hour sleep period, then the astronauts will be awakened. There will be about another 3-hour period during which they will prepare for the first extravehicular
excursion.
Jim, I
feel exactly like I thought I was. I really want to get out, but I think the discretion is the better part of the valor here.
That's Charlie Duke saying he knew he'd be too excited to sleep before.
Glad you think that.
Discretion's the better part of valor. He knows he's tired. They're going to try to sleep, but
Man, it's really tempting, though. It really looks nice out there.
John says it really looks nice out there. They will both be... It'll be difficult to sleep when you're so keyed up. The doctors well know that. Most of the astronauts, when they land on the moon, are so excited that it's difficult to sleep that first night. Also, in the lunar module itself, it's a little hard to sleep. It's much better, they've found, to take off their spacesuits, and this takes a long, long time. And to one of them stretches out in a hammock across the cover of the descent rocket. There's a big can, looks like a big ash can, right in the middle of the cabin there, and that's just a cover over the top of the descent rocket.
Jim, if you did get on my 047 on the axis, was plus 37566. 053 was minus 73667.
The other...
Give me those values again, Charlie. I didn't copy them.
Throughout these lunar landings,
plus
they've gradually refined the methods by which they stretch their hammocks and sleeping gear across this cabin, which isn't too roomy by any means, so that they can get some sleep. And hopefully that fatigue, if they indeed are as tired as they sense, will help them to overcome the excitement of landing on the moon to get some good rest. Then tomorrow at 16 hours 30, that's the time that they will depressurize the cabin and open the hatch. That's at 16 hours 30 GMT on Friday for the first EVA or the first lunar excursion. Now, I recorded this conversation with Charlie Duke about that first EVA before he left here on Earth several weeks ago, and here's the way he described it for me. Charlie, how do you see the first overall first excursion? What are the most important things you're going to do the first time out, that first 7 hours on the moon?
Well, the first is getting out of the hatch.
you got to back out.
That's right. After that, and getting onto the surface to what will be the greatest thrill of my life. It's business right away and to work, and unstowing the lunar rover is very important to us for our future geology training.
Very important, yeah.
So we'll have to get it off right away and make sure it checks out. Then after that is our experiments package deployment. I have the lunar surface drill to do, which was the same experiment Dave Scott had.
Now, they switched it around among pilots for this mission than from the one...
That's right.
Apollo 15.
Primarily because we had to go, due to the problems that Dave Scott had, we went to a longer stem on the very first probe. Mm-hmm. And this stem is 54 inches long with a 17-inch drill, which means a reach height of 71 inches. That new probe is about a meter and a half long, and when you put the drill on the top of it, it's almost 2 meters.
Mm-hmm.
We make it a meter and three quarters long.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that the taller the man, the easier he has to reach the handles of the drill, which actuate the drill. So John felt like he would be tottering on instability reaching that high, so it was given to me to do that experiment.
Yeah, John is, how tall are you?
I'm 6 feet tall, and John's about 5'9 or 5'10.
Mm-hmm. So the taller man could handle the drill
easy,
better.
Yes, uh-huh, mm-hmm. And be more stable. So that's my job now.
Mm-hmm.
On Apollo 17, they will have a drill also, and it's going to be back to the commander since Gene Cernan is the tallest man on that flight.
Uh-huh. Okay, what else about the ALSEP?
Well, John has three experiments that he's doing while I'm performing the drill. He has a portable magnetometer, I'm sorry, a surface magnetometer that he's putting out, a passive seismometer for moonquakes, and an active seismometer that he will be deploying, which is, when I say active, I mean that he will be firing charges, small explosive charges, under this little foot pad that he carries with him along a series of listening devices.
Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about the thumper.
That's
and
right. The
geophones.
Thumper and the geophones. That's
mm-hmm.
correct.
You'll be describing it as the thumper.
Right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it'll be called a thumper, and he will be firing the thumper along the geophone line so that mm-hmm. they will get a real time feel for the underlying material in our landing site.
Mm-hmm. This is common to prospecting and oil drilling examinations.
That's
around
correct.
The Earth,
uh-huh. They can then determine what's below the surface down to probably a few kilometers with our small charges.
Uh-huh. And then after you leave, these mortars will be fired out some distance.
They go out a mile, yes. Mm-hmm. So we'll get bigger explosion and cover a greater area, and they can then extrapolate their data mm-hmm. to a few kilometers anyway around mm-hmm. the moon.
What else do you see as highlights of that first EVA?
Well, we're going to man the rover after the first 4.5 hours and go about a kilometer and a half out to the west to a crater that we've named Flag Crater, which is about 280 meters in diameter and about 60 meters deep.
Is that an impact crater?
Yes, it is, we feel. And it has excavated into the Cayley Formation, which is the primary unit that we will be sampling on in our landing area, immediate landing area, and the purpose is to sample the Cayley with depth based on the impact nature of the crater, and then to return to about halfway back to the LEM, in other words about 3/4 of a kilometer, to sample another crater about similar size.
Mm-hmm.
This will give us a distribution in the Cayley of over a kilometer, and will give us a chance to check out a unit for its distance horizontally across the
mm-hmm.
surface.
Well, the bulk of the first EVA, then, is taken up, time-wise, is taken up in deploying the experiments package.
That's correct. First 4.5 hours, right? Mm-hmm. And then after that, we go into geology, and we'll have about 2 hours of geology.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Charlie,
sure.
for telling us about the first EVA.
You're right.
Charles Duke, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 16. This is Rhett Turner.
That, of course, was recorded a month ago before the boys left Houston for the last time and that blast off to the moon. We're listening to Jim Irwin continuing to give the latest updated information to Duke and Young on the surface of the moon. Ken Mattingly going around in his proper circular orbit in the command craft, having gotten that service propulsion system engine to fire properly. He's in an orbit ranging from 98 to 126 kilometers above the surface, and that is appropriate enough for his waiting period, his hovering in the command ship to await the return of the lunar landers. Jim Irwin's going through several pages of the flight plan of instructions to the astronauts to get them ready for the EVA, for the first extravehicular activity you heard Charlie Duke describing there. That will come at 16 hours 30 on Friday, and we, of course, will be on the air with you for that. Let's listen to Charlie Duke and Jim Irwin talking.
Sequence 3 is on page 3-4, and that's doff suits. And that doff suit should occur at about 105.58. And At that point, y'all be in a position there where you can eat, and we can brief you on the rest of the surface plan. Over.
Right, that sounds super, Jim. We'll press on with those changes, and in this briefing, we'd like a word about what our lunar stay looks like, and et cetera.
Okay, sure, we understand.
Get all that.
That's Charlie Duke.
For some reason, it's remarkable, but once you sit down up here, the comm just clears up beautifully.
Very good.
Charlie says, once you sit down up here, the communications cleared up beautifully, and they're using the broadband Omni antenna. The big dish antenna isn't working.
But okay, let's terminate the fuel vent, Orion.
Okay, so now they're going to stop venting the descent propulsion system fuel. In other words, spilling out the extra pressure.
Right here.
Getting rid of it. Deactivating the descent stage completely. It'll be just a launching platform from now on.
Okay, you're a target.
Inert.
Stand by.
That was John Young asking Houston, okay, do you want a target?
Roger, go ahead and torque, Orion. They look very good.
Okay.
Maybe he said torque it.
Boy, these are really neat optics. The Earth is in the window, and I'm looking right at the star. That's really good.
He was indeed looking through his optics. He said, do you want to torque it? Do you want to move it? Move the optics of his star sighting mechanism. This is his onboard sextant.
Orion, this is Houston. I have some parking angles for you for the IMU.
Torquing angles for the IMU. This means that he is now going to look for some stars.
286.25. Y is all zeros. Z is 087.57. Over.
These are the three axes of
286.25.
Of the optics, of the optical system, the x-axis, the y-axis, the z-axis, and you heard the numbers for him to torque into this system or apply here in order to help align his inertial measurement unit for use if he should have to take off in the next in an emergency. So Apollo 16 is on the surface of the moon. Astronauts John Young and Charles Duke have now successfully landed, and they're going to get a good night's sleep, say a good 8-hour sleep period. It's day where they are and will be until they leave the moon. And Ken Mattingly is safely in a circular orbit overhead. That's all from Houston. This is Rhett Turner near Mission Control.
We come to the close of the Voice of America's live coverage of one of the most critical periods in the flight of Apollo 16, a delayed and successful descent and landing of the lunar module Orion in the Descartes Highlands of the Moon. Touchdown came at 2 hours 23 minutes GMT. The Voice of America will return to the air with its worldwide network at 16 hours GMT Friday, April 21st, for special coverage of the first moon excursion. We will be on our normal frequencies to all areas except Latin America. In Latin America, the frequencies will be 21.485, 17.875, 17.785, and 15.225. We will continue to broadcast regular reports on the progress of Apollo 16 and interrupt our regularly scheduled programs if necessary. Our thanks to space correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. This is Norman Guerin in Washington.